This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Early in his book, Nick Haddad tells us that he was not a young butterfly enthusiast or even had a butterfly collection as a kid. But the professor, who is also senior terrestrial ecologist at the W.K. Kellogg Biological Station, now spends much of his time searching for the most rare butterfly in the world. Nick Haddad's book is called The Last Butterflies, A Scientist's Quest to Save a Rare and Vanishing Creature. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
How did you become immersed in the research of rare species of butterflies?
So when I was an undergraduate, I eventually decided I wanted to be involved in ecology and conservation biology. And I studied birds. And I thought that I would be going on to do graduate school working on birds. But after being an undergraduate, I had a chance to go to Guatemala. Well, everybody wants to do that. And I didn't really know what I was going to be doing there, but I was dropped off in the woods with three things, a tent, a mountain bike, and a butterfly net. And I was left there. The people that I was working with knew I knew nothing about butterflies. So I was there for 2 years in the forest, and I was told to collect everything. And I loved it. I love collecting things. So I had a great time, learned a lot about butterflies, and moved on.
And what did you learn about butterflies specifically that made you want to try to study the ones which we see are declining in population?
So when I was in Guatemala, I caught 535 butterflies. And among those, I caught new butterflies to science. And one was a new genus and a new species. So what's a new genus? A genus is just really different. This butterfly could have been a lineage that is millions of years old. And that butterfly was really rare. Only five have ever been seen. So then I knew things were rare. I was a conservation biologist, and I got, you know, invited to work on rare species, and I loved it.
So how does a butterfly go from being abundant, where we think that their population is stable and plentiful, then to rare, and then perhaps close to extinction?
It's really scary, actually. So these things can go from common to abundant in just really a few years or a couple decades. And so honestly, the biggest factor causing the loss of butterflies is the loss of their habitat. And it's happened over and over again. The loss of their habitat can be just literally the creation of forests and fields. It can be the loss of wetlands, and we have that problem here in Michigan. But there's another part to the loss of butterfly habitat. We might think we're protecting things, but we're letting the habitat degrade to such a low level that the butterflies can be declining, even though we're protecting them. And that's what I've learned as a scientist working on rare butterflies.
Can you give an example of that, where we're doing something where we think we are protecting habitat and yet we're actually making the problem worse?
It happens over and over again, and I'm as guilty as anybody. So when I started working on my first rarest butterfly, it's called the St. Francis Seder butterfly, and it occurs in North Carolina and only at one Army base in North Carolina. And so when I got there, I was studying about 10 populations, and I thought, what am I going to do? What's the first thing I'll do? I'm going to protect their habitat. And so by protecting their habitat, I'm just going to keep people out. Nature had worked for decades, centuries, and I was going to keep people out and hope to protect them. So I started working on this butterfly in 2002, and in 2005, I saw the first population lost. Then another one lost in 2007, 2008, 2009, several in 2010, then 2011, to the point where there was a one left. And that's when I had this epiphany that by me protecting the butterfly, I was really causing them harm, because these butterflies needed something that I was trying to keep out, which is natural disturbances. In this case, those disturbances were fire and wetlands created by beaver. The butterfly lives along streams and grassy wetlands. And what I was doing was allowing keeping out those natural disturbances and allowing the habitat to degrade to the point where we were losing the butterflies.
What are some other changes in habitat that might put a population of butterflies at risk?
So I will say first that one of the things that is key to most of the butterflies is this idea of natural disturbances. So fire, flooding, in fact, even hurricanes can have some benefits to butterflies. So that's one big area. But then, of course, just the loss of habitat, the habitat being covered by urban areas or by turning to agriculture. But then, you know, there's others, like we don't know the effects of the increased use of harsh pesticides on insects. We know that those pesticides cause loss of plants, including food plants for butterflies, and they're also reducing insect populations. Pests, that's what we want them to do, but they can also have effects on species we care about.
How fragile are butterflies?
So there's two aspects to fragility. One is, I mean, we all think of these dainty insects with beautiful wings, and I, in fact, have to think about fragility often. I catch butterflies to mark them and track their populations, and I have to worry about damaging their wings, you know, almost every day that I'm working with them. But then there's the other part, which is the fragility of populations. And what we've noticed is that they can be incredibly fragile. They can decline from abundant in the millions to in the thousands or even hundreds in just a couple decades.
And is that because they need a certain set of conditions? And if any one of those is not in place, then that can cause a decline in population.
The butterflies need very high-quality habitat. And the first and foremost they need is their food plant for their caterpillars. I mean, that is just item number one. And that food plant can be lost. I mean, it can be, you know, bulldozed over. That's obvious. Or they can be sprayed with herbicides. That's also obvious. But they can also be lost through change in habitat that is, in a way, natural. That is the changing of, let's say, grassland to forest. If the butterfly needs food that's in grasslands or open lands, which often butterflies do, then by letting those habitats change, then the butterfly can be lost.
You mentioned marking wings to track butterflies. Is this the main way that researchers like you go about trying to figure out if a species is at risk?
Yeah, it's not the main way, but it's the best way. And so why is it the best way? Well, if we can mark a butterfly, we can track its fate. We know when the time that it lives or dies. We know how it moves through the landscape. And so it provides us with the data we need to use the most rigorous scientific methods to estimate the size of populations. It's not the only way, but still people ask me, like, how do you mark a butterfly? And it turns out you just use a magic marker, a Sharpie pen, and write a number on its wing.
Is research getting better? I mean, is people like you go about doing this, is just the accumulation of knowledge making it more complete?
The accumulation of knowledge is absolutely key to understanding why these rare butterflies have gone to the alarming, you know, edge of extinction, to also how we can pull them back from the brink. And the science advances, but it can take a long time. I can tell you in my case, I've studied one rare butterfly for 17 years, and I finally feel like I know enough about the butterflies, just basic biology, to understand how to recover it. I mean, just when I say basic, we think that, oh, what does a butterfly need? It needs its food plant. And so think about monarchs. A lot of people out there will know monarchs need milkweed. We plant milkweeds in our gardens. I just planted a bunch last week. But some are more complicated than that. They might need two different plant species when they're small caterpillars or big caterpillars. And those are the kinds of things we need to figure out.
So since you brought up the monarch, your book actually has a chapter dedicated to a fairly small sample, really, of the butterflies which could be in danger. And you say that the one that was kind of on the cusp for you was the monarch. You questioned whether or not you should include it in the book. Why did you end up including the monarch?
Well, so this is ironic, really, in the end. I included the monarch in my book because I wanted to distance myself from monarchs. And why is that? Everybody, if anybody knows about a butterfly, they know the monarch. And so when I ask people, if I'm giving a talk at a museum and there are kids or adults in the audience, and I ask, what butterfly do you know? Almost everyone knows the monarch. And I wanted to say, these are about other butterflies that people don't know that are going towards extinction. But sadly, I should have paid more attention to the monarch. In the news recently is the Western monarch that is decreasing more rapidly than the Eastern monarch that we're familiar with here in Michigan. That butterfly has gone from millions to 28,000 butterflies. In fact, it's so rare, it would have been front and center in a chapter in my book.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Nick Haddad is the author of The Last Butterflies, A Scientist's Quest to Save a Rare and Vanishing Creature. Haddad is also a professor and senior terrestrial ecologist at the W.K. Kellogg Biological Station in Hickory Corners. If time and the number of pages printed were not a factor here, and you could just make this, spend as much time on it and make the book as big as you wanted to, how many species of butterfly could you realistically say could apply to, that you could say that they are endangered?
So in the United States, there are 24 species. That list is growing. In the world, well, in Europe, we could find another 24 or more species. And then the hard part of that answer is we don't know as much about species that are in tropical countries. And that's where we really need effort. But just in my book, I would add more species, including, sadly, species that are in Michigan.
Why did people think that the Fender's blue was extinct?
So the Fender's blue was discovered in 1932, and by 1937, it was thought extinct. And they weren't totally sure why it went extinct. They maybe thought that the food plant for the butterfly had disappeared, but honestly, they didn't really know the food plant for the butterfly. And so anyway, they thought for 5 decades that it was gone from the face of the earth.
And then it's discovered. How does this discovery come about?
This was just really a matter of chance. So this 12-year-old butterfly collector was out just searching for other butterflies and caught one small blue butterfly that just looked different from others. And he's a kid collector, so he wanted that different thing. And he also had seen pictures of this butterfly, Fender's blue, but didn't realize that it was a rare butterfly. Well, when he showed it to experts, they told him, you've got something really important here. It's all of a sudden resurrected.
So you also tell us about the British large blue. This one is extinct, correct?
It is extinct.
As far as we know?
It is extinct. I'm certain that butterfly is extinct. It occurred in such a small area and also around intense butterfly people. Butterflies, especially in the 19th century and into the 20th century, were the way most people learned about nature. I think they were like the birds of our time. And it was known to be declining since the late 1800s and eventually went extinct in 1979.
So if we find out that a population of butterflies is in decline, and maybe a species of butterflies is in decline, what are the things that can be done to stop it and then reverse it?
So there are different things that we can do. And so the butterflies I talk about are so rare that the efforts that can be made often aren't something that, well, you know, just anybody out there could do. They're in small areas. They need very particular things. But then there are other butterflies that are rare where we can do something. Like I brought up that I plant milkweed myself. Well, the monarch butterfly in the East has declined by 87% in the last 20 years. It's thought that monarch butterflies need 1.8 billion milkweeds planted to help restore its populations. Well, 1.8 billion is a big number. I planted 18, so I'm 1/1,000,000th of the way there. But if all of us were thinking about improving the kinds of plants we have in our, even in our gardens, the food plants for caterpillars or even flowers for adults, then that would get us at least some way to conserving butterflies that are declining.
You say in your book that when you speak to non-scientists, you'll get the question, why should we be concerned about populations of butterflies declining? And you say that sometimes people are a little disappointed with your answer because you'll say, well, they're not necessarily pollinators and they don't necessarily play this role in the ecosystem. So as a non-scientist, let me put the question again to the scientists. Why should we be concerned about these species of butterfly or populations of butterflies declining and perhaps at the risk of extinction?
Yeah, so just for contrast, monarch butterflies number in the hundreds of millions, and they can be effective pollinators. They can be food for other animals in the ecosystem. But the rarest butterflies are not like that. The rarest butterflies number in the hundreds or the thousands, the low thousands. They're just not enough of them to have an effect on ecosystems. I like to say that, you know, if we gathered up all adults of the rarest butterflies, we could hold them, literally kind of get them into a ball and hold them in our hands in a ball that's the size of a basketball. But so then why conserve them? And in the end, the reasons are that people just should not be the cause of extinction. It's really just an ethical concern that that we want to preserve the diversity of life on Earth. And yeah, we shouldn't be seeing those butterflies lost at our hands.
You've described some of this, but do we know enough to take the proper steps to ensure that we humans are not the cause of butterflies going extinct?
So with the rarest butterflies, we know why they've declined. They're declining, or they've declined to the level they are, because people have changed their landscape, changed their habitats, and gotten them to this threshold. With more common butterflies, frankly, we're still, you know, searching for the real answers. And so so we really think we're in a time in history when we're losing butterflies and insects at a phenomenal rate. And yes, habitat loss is a part of that. Climate change is probably part of that, but we don't know the one smoking gun to stop that decline. And that's really one of the biggest scientific challenges of my lifetime of this era.
So let's go back to the title of this book, The Last Butterflies. Specifically, as we read this, we're talking about the last butterflies of a species. But how much risk is there that someone who is listening to this interview could see the last butterfly in their lifetime?
So in the end, we're not going to see the last butterfly. And when I started writing this book, I thought, well, we very well could see the last butterflies of the different types of butterflies I talk about. But then as I got into this more and more, I realized that butterflies, not just the rarest butterflies, but many, many butterflies are declining at a phenomenal rate. And when I say phenomenal, I was part of a study recently that my student led that found that in Ohio, in the state of Ohio, through a very rigorous study, the most widespread study at that scale, of a statewide scale, in the country, and found that butterflies over the last 20 years, butterflies in general, have declined by 30%. So that means what? If I was in my garden 20 years ago and saw 100 butterflies, if I went out today, I'm more likely to see 70. And that decline is still happening. So we see the decline of not just the rare butterflies, but the common butterflies like monarchs. And when that's happening, frankly, we all have reason to be very scared.
You do tell us that in the time you've been doing this research, there has not been a species nor a subspecies of butterfly that has gone extinct, correct?
So since I have started, yes, I know of no butterfly that's gone extinct.
Should we take that as a small sign of encouragement?
So to me, given the rate of decline of butterflies and insects, it is surprising to me that so few have gone extinct. We know of just a few species, and we know of maybe a dozen or so. So that is at least the one, you know, piece of good news. But others are at such small population sizes, like the butterflies I talk about in my book, that there really is cause for alarm.
Do you worry about some sort of tipping point where if one goes extinct, you might find that then the conditions have been set that several others will follow?
I do. So when I see the rate of decline, not just of the rarest butterflies, but other butterflies more generally, well, what I'm worried about is we've already reached that tipping point. And I don't think we have. I think we can reverse course, but we are at a time when we really need to focus our efforts, our attentions, given what we're seeing, not just, you know, in the areas that I work or at the level of a state, but in the country and in the world. And this is the time to really dig down and reverse course.
But you do tell us in your book you're an optimist.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because I am an optimist. And so what I see, what I try to express in my book on The Last Butterflies, is that we have seen them decline near to extinction. But I try to focus on the scientists and the people involved in conservation that have dedicated their time to not just understanding why the butterflies are declining, but learning how we can get them set on the right track. And I really do see signs that we can acquire that knowledge and then we can apply that to restoration. I've seen it in the butterflies I study and in my own efforts. And so I really do try to provide one or some glimmer of hope that if we really, you know, double down on our effort, that we can reverse course.
Nick Haddad's book is called The Last Butterflies, A Scientist's Quest to Save a Rare and Vanishing Creature. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You can find links with more information about the book at WMUK.org. You can subscribe to the podcast, WMUK's West Southwest, through Apple Podcasts and by searching podcasts in Google Music. It can also be found at our website, WMUK.org, and through the WMUK app. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.